Welcome to the Hammer Time Radio Show. Yes, I am Maurice, on behalf of A Handyman's Haven, transmitting in the A Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, the voice with your trusted local news and talk. If you'd like to enter into the discussions that are going to be presented today, we welcome you to do that. The phone number for that to be live on air, and so the entire listening audience can learn and gain knowledge from the various conversations that we may have. Give us a call here at 520-790-2040. This will get you on the air shortly, and we can discuss your project that you're working with or some difficulty that you may have in various aspects. A Handyman's Haven in Tucson is located at 1724 South 6th Avenue. Our frequency at that frequency, our telephone number at that location is 520-624-7200. The address is 1724 South 6th Avenue, the big yellow building, six blocks south of 22nd Street, which is on the west side of the street. Our hours of operation are from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. Monday through Saturday. However, we do have a unique feature coming up with the Thanksgiving weekend approaching us, and we will be closed on Thanksgiving Day, from all the way through to the following Monday. We'll be open up again some Monday after the Thanksgiving weekend. So Thursday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, we provide time for our family due to the extensive work sessions that we have throughout the entire year, to enjoy the Thanksgiving that each and every one of us have throughout the period of time. We are all thankful for, as we say, being upright or walking on grass instead of pushing up the grass and a few other things of that nature, even though we may have some high maturation difficulties as we proceed through our life. We have a Green Valley location. The address in Green Valley is 125 West Calle de las Tiendas, Suite 103. And if you know where Manuel's Mexican Food Restaurant is in the northern end of Green Valley, you walk out of the front door and you just keep walking across the roadway and you'll be in the area where A Handyman's Haven is located, Suite 103 Alpha. Hours of operation in Green Valley are from 8:30 in the morning to 4 or so in the afternoon. We are going to be closed down in Green Valley also from Thursday, Friday, Saturday through Sunday, opening back up the following Monday. We do have a good staff down in Green Valley. The phone number in Green Valley is 520-369-4858. So come on down and see us, give us a phone call, and we'll try to answer as many questions as we can concerning various things that you have going on. This past Saturday, which was yesterday, I had the very fortunate experience of proceeding out to the Arizona Air National Guard, situated at the Tucson International Airport. Many of you know that in the past when I've talked about it, I have fulfilled 20 years of obligation in the Air National Guard. Throughout their program, I also obtained the knowledge and the experience to fly airplanes, military aircraft, and flew several of them that the Air National Guard had at that facility. They had a celebration. This is a period of time that is on the off years of the Air Force nationwide celebration. This happened to be sponsored by the YMCA in Tucson, recognizing all veterans. And I was there not only on behalf of the Air National Guard, but mainly on behalf of the Southern Arizona Home Builders Association, which was honoring veterans to participate in this fine organization. There was a couple hundred people out there, many people I haven't seen in a long period of time, and it was a very outstanding event as we learn about what the Air National Guard is still doing in proceeding and assisting of the United States in the protection of various aspects throughout the military requirements that the United States has. Some projects that we're working on at A Handyman's Haven were very, very extensive in a lot of these. We did finish the framework out of a gloss black laminate for a kiosk in the Tucson Mall area. I visited that mall yesterday, Sunday. The individuals that own that mall were very appreciative of redoing their frame structure, sort of like a picture frame out of gloss black that settles in with the rest of the apparatus that they have in that area. They are the framework that borders their TV screen or monitors or whatever you may want to call it, that they show you videos and things of that nature of the products that they have for sale. So that was an outstanding project, a lot of work in putting that together from that standpoint. We do have a lot of other projects going on. We're looking at one right now to provide doors for a major bookcase system. There'll probably be about 14 of these doors, I believe, in that area, somewhere around 30 inches by 30 inches. And so we're coming up with a solution for that, that the a medical company in Tucson is very much interested in closing their bookcases. Most of people do not know, to a certain extent, that the width of a shelf in a bookcase or any sort of case structure that's going to be holding implements that we plan on storing in them, if it's 24 inches or more, it should have a stiffener on the front edge or so of the shelf. And many of you, if you've ever taken a look at bookcases that are for sale in various furniture facilities in Tucson, you notice that they look very, very adorable with this nice edge that they have along the front. Well, even though it is as beautiful as it is, there is a structural requirement, so to speak, in order to make sure that the shelving will stay relatively flat and not bow due to the weight that is placed on them. We as humans seem to have the innate ability of overloading shelving, and consequently it will bow down due to the weight. Of course, the simple solution is what we say, download the shelf, turn it upside down, put it back in place again, and then after a period of time, it'll bow the other direction, and you can do the same thing just continually throughout its lifespan. But that stiffener is very, very important, and we have to be mindful of that when we're working on various aspects. Another little tip that I came about, which was rather interesting, is that if you want to put some portable stiffeners in a vertical area, measure the space between the top of one shelf and the bottom of the other, get yourself some plywood as an example, and cut it that so it fits right in there, that shelf area. Then the next thing you can look for is look for a book that you do not have any use for, you do not want to give it away or anything else. You're mainly thinking about throwing it away, but gut the inside of the book, take all the pages out. In this case, if you use a 3/4 inch wide support system, make sure that the interior portion of the book will house the 3/4 inch plywood, and then you can glue the book in, so to speak, the top and the bottom, as we call it, the front or the back, right to the shelf, and now you'll have a shelf that is adorable, and most people will think that you have a book in there from that standpoint, but yet it's providing you structural support for your shelf so it doesn't bend. I did work on a project not too long ago that the shelf in the series of cabinets was about 60 inches in length from left to right, and the customer had provided portable support pegs because the shelf was bowing. I just can't imagine anybody building or installing shelving to a certain extent that it was that long without having support systems on the inside of the cabinet itself in order to prevent the shelving from bowing. Anyway, it looks like we're coming upon our first break. John Couch is our production engineer today, and he's ready to file us away. We're on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. So, John, take it away. Folks, we got the power. As the interlude just said, I am Maurice from A Handyman's Haven. We're transmitting in the A Handyman's Haven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. As we come off of the segment that we just finished, one other thing I'd like to talk about is countertops. We do provide all countertops out of various materials, except for tile countertops and stainless steel. There are people in town that love to provide that for you, and we could suggest various contractors to do that. One thing I'd like to talk about at the present time period, that those of you may have read in a paper this past week, an individual who was arrested, and I believe he's incarcerated, for violation, violating some of the Arizona Register of Contractors codes, which are part of the Arizona Revised Statutes. There are five categories of craftsmanship that are provided by various people that do require, Arizona Revised Statutes indicates that you have to be a registered contractor by the Arizona Register of Contractors. You have to pass certain explicit testing procedures, as well as business opportunities and things of that nature. And these five craftsman activities are, one, HVACs, the heating, venting, and air conditioning of your home. That is one of them. The second one would be, not necessarily in any order, would be any major electrical component adjustments that you have throughout your house during the remodeling phase, or just because you want to move something, one needs to be very, very careful. The third one would be roofing. If you're doing any roofing, structural roofing consideration, that would be one that you need to obtain a registered contractor for. So that's three of them. The fourth one would be swimming pools, construction of a swimming pools, and that's extremely important also. And the last one is plumbing. So if you're going to be doing any major plumbing work or removing or installing a new plumbing, along with that and the other four that I've just mentioned, do require a certified contractor that is registered with the Arizona Register of Contractors and has been issued the proper certifications for those types of activities. Many of those, as you can imagine, are pretty serious. And if some of the things do not work properly, you can have a major, major problem. I do remember a while back, an incident of someone that I was familiar with. The company had that was secured by the customer had moved some of the interior electrical equipment, and the next thing we knew that it fell across the combustion chamber of the heating element of an air conditioning system and blew smoke in the building and created the fire department to arrive to see what was going on. Electrical would be the same thing. If it's not hooked up properly or it's shorted or if they use the wrong wiring, that could be hazardous to your health. I do remember discussing with somebody in a store that they said, every time we turn on our dishwasher, it blows the circuits. And I'm trying to figure out why this was the case for them. And it turns out that they had too many implements attached to one, a 15-amp circuit breaker. And so when he started up the dishwasher, I don't know whether the dishwasher was planned in the initial circuitry of the home. It blew the circuit breaker. And so I says, what are you going to do about it? And he says, well, I'm just going to put a heavier circuit breaker on the system and leave the wiring alone. Well, wiring of years past for more circuits in a home, they generally use a 15-amp wiring system. And today they mostly use the wires that can sustain 20 amps of electricity flowing through. So one has to be very careful when you tackle some of these. If you do not have the sufficient knowledge to do it, I'd highly recommend that you obtain a certified contractor in order to accomplish that. If you'd like to enter into the conversation today and offer some information concerning our subjects, we would truly appreciate that. Phone number here to call for being on air and live is 520-790-2040. We're going to talk about counters. A Handyman's Haven does produce counters, and as most of you know, on behalf of myself and the entire staff, we thank you very much for voting us Arizona's Reader's Choice Award this past year in cabinets and countertops. And those of you who have come down to the store and talked to us about various aspects, I also thank you for that. So countertops, yes, we handle, our main forte is laminate countertops from that standpoint. We do handle mainly all the countertops of material that's available from Formica, which is a forerunner for the major laminate countertop business back in the 1900s. And today, there's also Wilson Art Company that has a fine line of countertops. And we can obtain any one of those countertops through a various and variety of edges, front edges that are available. The other main forte that we have is that we can build a countertop for you and basically eliminate the 45-degree miters that go into a 90-degree corner, as well as the 22.5-degree miters that would go into a 45-degree offset kitchen. I see we do have a caller on the line. Ingrid, welcome to the Hammer Time Radio Show. Hope you're having a great day today. So how may we enter into a conversation with you?
Hi. Well, you said callers were welcome. And if you listened to Charles Heller's, one of his programs this morning, you might have heard him talk about the business that's being pushed out, PDQ. And she has a very little time to do that in. And it's really very disgusting. They're harassing her. But I wondered from your end of things, when a business folds, and say it's a restaurant or a hotel, and they have to get out, and they have there are a lot of fixtures there. But first of all, have you ever been involved in anything like that?
Yes, ma'am. My mom and dad were involved with that on the Benson Highway in the vicinity of Palo Verde. Our building was condemned, and so I do have some association with what takes place in that format.
Not condemned because it was in bad shape, but because they had to get out. It was
because they were expanding Benson Highway from a two-lane highway coming from Benson into Tucson, and the road structure, when it was all finished and done, came within about a foot of the front door of our restaurant that we had in that location.
Uh-huh. So when everything folded up, what happened with all of the things in there? What happens to the sinks, a professional kitchen, the components of? Where does that go? Do you ever come into a situation like that and help remove it? And perhaps, I don't know, sell it secondhand, or are some of these things actually recyclable? How does that work? What happens to all that good stuff that has value?
Well, what basically occurs is, I don't quite know what's in the PDQ operation, except there's probably a lot of shelving and a lot of tables that have all this equipment sitting on, as well as their records. They're probably in file cabinets or things of that nature. I'm just suspecting. But they'll obviously, as you've heard Charles talk about, in this instance with PDQ, they're going to be open 7 days a week, and they're going to try to market and sell all the products that's available, as well as the fixtures. I do know that our initial business that A Handyman's Haven had in 1999 through the midpoint of 2004, we used to buy various aspects of things that were available. We wouldn't hear about them either from hotels that were refurbishing or things of that nature. If you're in a restaurant business, as an example, I do know that when we had to close down our own restaurant, we were still able to live on a piece of property. There was four apartments available, and our family lived in those four apartments themselves. And Mom and Dad kept many of the items because they could also use them in the actual living conditions or outside storage capability. So in a restaurant with the big stainless steel equipment, if they have a lot of things like that, there are installations in Tucson that will buy that used equipment and then try to resell it. Most of it does not go to waste from that standpoint. However, today, depending upon the marketability of the metal itself, it may be more worthwhile to take it to a reclamation yard. They'll pay you so much per pound, and then that'll go back into the system and be reworked from that standpoint. Like automobiles, as an example, you see them crush them nice and flat, and they'll haul them off. I used to also work many years ago for an aircraft company in town that used to purchase the rights for certain pieces of equipment or materials off of airplanes out at the Davis-Monthan Reclamation Yard, which is known as AMARC today. And after all the items that were pulled out, such as copper wiring, all the instrumentation, things of that nature, the big guillotine used to come in and chop the wings off of an airplane. The unfortunate thing is that one of the airplanes that I used to fly and learn to fly in was one of the ones that was being knifed up at that time period. And I felt rather, sort of hurt. But anyway, it goes back in, it gets melted down into ingots, and it's shipped out back out, and they're all reclaimed. So we've been a reclaiming society for years, and that's typically what takes place when a business has to close down for whatever the reason happens to be. So I hope that helps you from that standpoint.
You've seen a lot of things come and go, and I was wondering from the perspective of a person who does the kind of business that you do, how you get, how you might become involved in not necessarily PDQ's business, because probably what they have is nothing but a toilet and some shelves that are attached, but other kinds of things, such as a home or a restaurant, a hotel. We've got hotels remodeling right now, and I just wonder how you might get involved, and if there are things that can be not sold as new, but made up better and put up for sale somehow. I just wonder, like, if you've seen that kind of stuff happen. But you've described the general picture wonderfully, and I was sorry to hear about what happened to some of those planes, because you're a pilot and that hurts.
Especially one when you put a lot of sweat and blood into it. That makes a big difference from that standpoint. And my dad used to also work at reclamation yards like that, and he used to build all the wooden shipping containers that needed to be built in order to package these items back up and get them shipped out to various places throughout the United States. So this has been going on for years. This isn't really anything new. We've been doing that, even though there is a monumental amount of merchandise that gets thrown into a landfill, and we're obviously trying to control that as much as the public can and other people can from that standpoint. So,
right. Well, I sometimes donate things to various organizations, and they use them for students to learn how to work on certain types of electronic equipment.
Sure, absolutely.
Things like that. And it's good to know that that happens. Thank you very much.
Oh, you're very welcome. And you and your family have a very pleasant Thanksgiving season.
Well, you too. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye now. And This completes the second segment of our program, and I see we got a wonderful substitute over there that's smiling at me. Kent is the production engineer in training. Not really. He's just experiencing our programs this time period. But Kent, take it away, and we'll see you after the break on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. I am Maurice Cerrone from Ahenny Manshaven, transmitting in the Ahenny Manshaven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. If you'd like to give us a call today concerning any questions that you may have, such as Ingrid did in the past segment, our phone number for live audience participation is 520-790-2040. So give us a call and we'll enter into the conversation. I was going to talk a little bit about, I'll finish up the discussion talking about countertops. We do quite an extensive array of countertops down at Ahenny Manshaven for our Green Valley location and also for the Tucson general area. We try to meet every challenge that comes along, and some of them are very, very challenging from that standpoint. So we can market for you or have available. We carry seven colors in stock. Some are Wilson Art and some are Formica. But a 10-foot piece of countertop with an integrated backsplash or a fully formed backsplash in the same piece of material with many edges that are available. The basic price starts out at $9 per linear foot. So for 10 feet, we're looking at $90. If you would like to do end capping or finishing of the ends yourself, we can sell you the material to accomplish that. If you'd like us to do it, there is a little slight bit of upcharge for that. If you need to have a 45-degree miter or a 22.5-degree miter or a splice made because you have a super long countertop, we can cut those for you, and then there's a $35 charge for that. So we're quite astute on many of the countertops. This past week or so, or it's been about the past month probably, we've been picking up two to three templated, as we call it, countertops for the customers that would like to have eliminate the 45 or the 22.5-degree miter that occurs on our countertops, or as well as the splices from that standpoint. When we do try to eliminate those, we make sure that the laminate countertop portion of it itself, as well as the substrate or the base that's going to hold the laminate, do not align with one another. And with that being in mind, due to the expansion and contraction of the home, we eliminate that separation that comes about as a result of that. So keep us in mind for your countertops. We also do any natural stone, or we also do all quartzes available from many manufacturers throughout the world. The interesting thing when we talk about natural stone and we talk about quartz countertops is that the sizes are limited, or the size of those materials are limited from that standpoint. And as a result, you may have a square footage requirement that puts you into a what we call the second slab or the third slab. And you may only need 5 to 10 square feet of the second slab that's coming about, but that's all we charge you for, folks. So if you need something like 55 square feet and the slab that you initially want to purchase is only 40 square feet, we're only going to charge you for 15 additional square feet and not for the complete second slab. So that basically keeps your countertop cost down in half of what it would be for many other fabricators in the Tucson area. Our phone number in Tucson, by the way, at Ahenny Manshaven is 520-624-7200. Our Green Valley store phone number is 520-368-4858. I'd like to talk a little bit about anchors in concrete. Many times we're adding porches or we're adding rails or things of that nature to various activities to get from one floor to the next floor, or just to get from one area of the ground level up to the main portion of the home that is available. And anchors in concrete can be very, very challenging from that standpoint. And one major factor, which I thought was very interesting, but it makes perfect sense, is what is the condition of the existing concrete that you plan on anchoring a post or the balusters or whatever you want, or the rails that you may need to employ, whether it's required by code or not code. And that can be very, very tenuous from that standpoint. There are many type of anchoring systems available. One company I know that provides a tremendous number of anchoring systems, as well as a lot of other metal adaptation implements, is the Simpson Company. So by going online and searching for Simpson metal anchors, you can see the fine array of anchors that they have available. Well, many of them are used today in anchoring the floor to the posts or the bottom plate for putting up studded walls, the studded wall itself to the roof joists. That's also very important. And many of you people may or may not know, but the roof can act like a wing on an airplane. And if you've ever seen one fly, that's not a pretty picture. I have been associated with watching a neighbor at where the front porch that was enclosed became an aerial object, and they found it in their backyard due to the windstorms around the Tucson area. This was years ago. We happened to have a part of our own building structure at A. Handyman's Haven in Tucson where the entire roofing material was ripped off and thrown over the building to the north side of the building. It was quite interesting. And so roofing itself, homes themselves can act as an airfoil, and people wonder, well, how can that happen? The pressure inside of a building is greater than the airflow that's going over the top of the building, so the pressure inside of the building will push the ceiling right off the studded walls or concrete walls. In fact, I had an interesting experience years ago attending the Boy Scout National Jamboree at AP Hill, Virginia, and we had a major windstorm come through the area, and it took I don't know how many tents that we were all living in and raised them up and then slapped them back down to the ground again and bent the tent poles and everything else is involved. And you wouldn't think, at least I didn't think at the time period, that the tent would be subjected to that type of flow, but it sure was. The tent itself, the V portion of the gabled roof part of the tent became an airfoil. And as that is, it reduces the air pressure on the top of the tent. The air pressure inside of the tent, because it was closed up, was greater. And it just sent the tent up in the air. And then when it all passed, it slapped it back down to the ground again and just bent all the poles. So any roofing or tinning or whatever it may happen to be can become an airfoil. And it's not a good thing to be around when it's trying to fly and you're trying to maintain your status on the ground. So keep that in mind from that standpoint. So anchoring items for rails to walk up on to protect you from falling. There is a code requirement for guardrails when you're walking on a surface. So if any of these surfaces are 30 inches or more above grade, it is required that the posts must resist a horizontal load factor of 200 pounds of pushing. So if you, as an example, are walking up a staircase and you happen to lose your balance or you stumble and you're taking your 150 or 200 or 250-pound body and throwing it against a guardrail, that's what it's talking about. And that guardrail has to sustain 200 pounds of force in a horizontal position. So there are many anchors available that you can accomplish that. Be aware of what the condition of the concrete is if you're utilizing that, or the wood that you're placing it and how it's anchored to whatever it happens to be, so you have the sound stability that you need to support what takes place. The human body can become a projectile, especially when you lose your balance and gravity is pulling against it at such a fantastic pace that the body cannot recover fast enough with sufficient strength to stop the movement from there. We've completed a third segment of our program on the A. Handyman's Haven Hammer Time Radio Show, AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. And we're going to get Kent to fire up the interlude between the third segment and the fourth segment, and we'll see you back shortly. Welcome back to the Hammer Time Radio Show. I am Maurice Cerrone from Ahenny Manshaven, and we're transmitting in the Ahenny Manshaven radio studio on AM 1030, The Voice, with your trusted local news and talk. One of the next thing I'm going to talk about right now is doors and installation of doors, mainly some of the exterior door system, even the interior doors. But the exterior doors are more defined from various things that need to take place, mainly because they not only have to provide a certain amount of security but from the outside, but they also have to keep the weather and things of that nature at bay. So one of the articles I was reading recently, it talked about the 10 exterior door installation killers. And I thought that was an interesting word that sort of caught my eye, that being the killers portion of it. But most people today like to install, as far as the contractors go, is what we call a pre-hung door system. And when we start talking about providing a door to a customer, surprisingly enough, there's 22 different aspects of a door that needs to be solved before we can order the door for the customer. It isn't just that you want a door to swing open and go into the house and lock. There's a lot of security issues associated with it. And due to the basic structure of the door generally, not of the door itself, but of the way the door is mounted in a home, it is in a relatively insecure fashion. If you really take a look at your door, I believe, in my opinion at least, that you'll find where the strike plate is. That's where the latch comes off the door and enters into the door frame itself. And that is a very thin portion of material, wood material, that is between the outer portion of the latch and the outer portion of the door frame. Sometimes maybe only a half inch. So it, and if the door is opening into the house, it's just pretty easy to get a ram pole or something of that nature, like the police department does if they're going to break into a home. And that's where they're going to aim the pole in order to snap that little piece of material that's there holding the latch. But in measuring your door, I'm not going to get involved with that today. But some of the basic things from an installer standpoint, and or even we as do-it-yourselfers, things that you need to have available. So there are lots of frustrations attached with hanging a door. One is running out of flashing tape. And that's the tape that is used, and you need plenty of that available in order to provide the proper exterior door installation material. And you better figure a trip to the store if you do not have a sufficient amount of it in order to provide the proper sealing that may occur. Running short of spray foam. Of course, with spray foam today, we can do a lot of things with spray foam. And when you get through plumbing and shimming the door, that's so it's perfectly plumb with at least the hinge side of the wall, and then moving on around to keep everything at a 90-degree angle, you're going to be using shims in order to properly level. One aspect would be used, but plumbing is the vertical aspect of it in order to keep it nice and straight for you as a starter. So you'll fill that back area there where all the shims are with spray foam. So that's an excellent way of doing something of that nature. And there is a sealant, various types of sealant that's available. Sometimes there's sealant between the door and the frame. There's gaps at the bottom and the top. We have special foam insulating materials down at our store that you can purchase for that. So you need to have a lot of sealant available, so that should be one thing to think about. The wrong sealant that you may use is not the right way of going. So you can improvise any old sealant, and a lot of it still has its mastic qualities, but you may risk having to go back over and do it again with tape or with paint in order to get the proper seal between the frame and the wall structure. There are several different aspects involved. A lot of wood framing of homes is one aspect. The other is blocks or CMU, which are the concrete gray-looking blocks. Slump blocks, they have to have special blocks that come out to be where the door frame is mounted. And then there's also adobe. We have had a couple requests of information on how to install up against adobe walls, which can be quite tricky from that standpoint. One of the other items would be your sill pan or the threshold or things of that nature. Having a proper threshold, there are adjustable thresholds also available, and those may be vitally important, especially if your floor is not level. I'm not saying flat. Flat and levelness are two different things. You can have a vertical wall that's flat, but it's not level. It may be plumb from there. So there's various terms that are used in various aspects of representing what needs to be accomplished for the door. Rigid sill pans are available, as well as adjustable sills are available. There's also in-swinging sills as well as out-swinging sills. Each one of those are designed for various applications. An out-swinging sill means that the door is swinging out into the atmosphere. It may be covered with the appropriate porch from that standpoint, but the ceiling at the bottom of the door has to have a special sill or threshold available that'll provide the ceiling that's required. And there's so much to be concerned with. Keeping track of all these parts are vitally important. They're not necessarily parts, but they're the materials that are needed in order to anchor the door and keep it appropriate that's so you can hang it properly. Some individuals may think that it's easier to hang a pre-hung door system that has the door and the frame together as a two individual units. And if one is not cognizant on how to hang the frame of the door up against the left wall, the hinge wall, and the header, there are some interesting websites available that you could get involved with in learning how to hang a door. Think about bad weather delays. Think about fabrication delays. I know that we're faced with those periodically. We may have the dream door that a customer is interested in, but some of the requirements may be extensive, and we've just gone through one of them recently where it will take 4 weeks to get in the insert that the customer would like to place in their door system. So all these things need to be considered, but the installer you use or yourself as a do-it-yourselfer needs to be aware of all the materials that are needed in order to properly hang a door that's so you can get the appropriate closing that you may need. You may even think about a heavy door, any door that is a solid core door or a door that has glass in it. I would highly recommend that you use ball bearing hinging. If ball bearing hinging is not available, definitely obtain heavy duty hinging. The type of hinge used on an interior door, that's what we call a 1 3/8 inch door, is a different size hinge than one that is used on an exterior door. If it's a steel door, if you want to take a look at a lot of solid core doors or steel doors when you go into various businesses, take a look at the hinging, and you'll see little round nubs at various locations between the leaves, and that probably happens to be a ball bearing or a thrust bearing type operation. One of the other things that should be done is that if you're hinge positioning is already placed on your jamb, on an existing jamb or a frame, as well as the door, go ahead and mount the leaves individually on the door as well as on the frame, and leave them somewhat loose, not extensively loose, but leave them so they can move up and down and back and forth. Don't tighten them down nice and tight. Then when you have them all positioned properly, then you get ready to hang the door and slide the pins in. You know, slide the top one in first and then slide the bottom one in. And then if all that seems to line up, you can slide in the middle one. And then you can start anchoring the screws that hold the hinge to the frame. Most important from that standpoint. Folks, we're coming upon the end of our program for this fine Sunday on November 24th. Thanksgiving is coming up, and we all have lots to be thankful for. And on behalf of the AHNE Men's Haven and the entire employee staff, hope you have a great season. Enjoy your family and friends, and we'll think about seeing you. Thank you. Notice I said think about seeing you next week. Jeff Prather is coming up with the Prather Point with some outstanding information about the last week's political aspect in the United States. Take care, folks. We'll see you next time.